the App Hour Podcast. Released July 10th, 2017. Episode 351. The Automation Amish.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
I'm back.
What's up, nerd?
Oh my, I hate computers.
Well, I'm not sure they're fond of you either.
Yeah, bastards. Like, everything's failing at the moment.
Yeah, you're like in that cycle of like, oh,
yeah.
Time to buy new ones or do the resets.
No, just a death spiral of bloody computer issues. My main machine, like, I've been tweeting like crazy about all the shit that's happening.
I've seen it, yes.
Yeah, my main computer, like my main editing dual Xeon beast here is like, I thought my hard drives were failed. Like my main render hard drive had failed. No, turned out to be the SATA cable giving smart data errors, as in smart, the acronym,
right.
Smart,
yeah, right.
The hard disk, yeah, thing, as I'm sure most people know about. Pain in the ass. Yeah, it turned out to be the bloody SATA cable. Nothing wrong with my drive at all. And then my lab machine died. A Windows 10 update just killed my lab machine. I can't even repair it. Windows 10 repair doesn't work. So I've got to nuke that machine.
Okay.
And then my internet at the lab doesn't work. Or it's on the blink. It's intermittent for some bloody reason I haven't figured out yet. Oh, man.
So what are you going to do about it, man? Switch to Linux?
Know. Linux ain't going to work if your internet's on the blink either.
No, that's true.
Said that.
I mean, you've overclocked everything, right? Or you have like really overspec machines, right?
No.
Oh, no?
Nope.
I was gonna say, if you did, you could go and just use it all with virtual machines and then...
Oh, right, no.
If you have a problem,
stupid.
You just wipe it out and reload it, you know, that kind of thing.
All the Linux fanboys come out of the bloody woodwork. Just stop it. Half of my shit works on Windows. I've been using Windows for 20 years. It's been working just fine. This is the first time ever that
that is incorrect.
What?
You've literally started another show the exact same way. I hate computers.
I?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what show. It's usually like printers or some other shit.
No,
Windows
no,
has
we've
never.
We've done this before. We've totally done this one before.
No.
Great. I'm going to go listen to every first 3 minutes of every episode.
You go back
just
and
to go
find,
prove you wrong.
Do it. Find where I can say
I
that Windows has completely ruined my machine that it can't even recover. Wow. I bet you it's. I can never recall it happening. Anyway, Linux has its own.
Of course,
bunch of crap.
That is not the answer. You're right. But,
yeah, exactly.
But I'm just saying this is not the first time you've complained about this stuff.
No, I hate computers. They always suck ass.
Yeah.
Well, what sucks ass, I'm trying to get this bloody thing working. I got one of these. We've talked about this in the past. TI sent me this millimeter wave radar thing.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I got one of those eval kits, right? And, I thought, oh, that's exciting. I want to play with this thing. It works at 80 gig, right? It's a,
cool.
This whiz-bang chip. It's like chip of the week. It's absolutely killer, right? And it bloody well doesn't work. I follow.
So is it like the dev kit doesn't work or what?
No, the dev kit does not work out of the box. I swear. I've tried on two different machines and two different operating systems.
PEBCAT going on there? No?
I followed their instructional video to the letter. I followed their instructional guide to the letter.
So
the first issue was that it doesn't detect the serial ports properly because it generates two serial ports, one's for data and one's for like comms and stuff. And then it talks to like a web-based app, like a cloud-based demo app. And
I see. So their software guys are all writing JavaScript and their hardware guys are all writing serial terminals.
And like it can't even detect, like Windows can't even detect the ports properly. Like it's just, my God.
I've had that. Those are the most frustrating ones because it's like,
well,
it happens on every system where it's like it just doesn't detect it. You probably don't have drivers installed. Usually that's the answer, right?
No. I managed to get the drivers working. I managed to get the app to communicate. So I thought, yes, problem solved, right? So I managed to actually solve that issue temporarily. Anyway, and then no, like, and it talked to the, it said connected to the board, everything's fine, I'm running their cloud app, I connected to the cloud app, everything's working, and then there's just no data coming out of the thing.
So it's like, start sending like a $50 tablet with the like, with the heart with the eval hardware,
with the eval hardware, yeah, right. Exactly.
It's made for some crap ass MediaTek processor, $50 tablet, and it just it'll work. It'll work for the first 2 hours of operation, and that's what most people use the demos for, anyways. You'll go, oh, that's interesting. Moving on.
So anyway, I went on the support forum, and they now want me to provide screenshots of what the dumps what the serial thing is.
Don't you
doing.
Have like a young Padawan that could be doing all this stuff for you?
Yeah, I do, but he tried it as well and it failed for him.
Oh
too.
Man. Maybe you made the wrong hire there. You gotta get a different Padawan.
No, he's just busy doing shit at the moment, Like it's a low priority thing.
That is a common thing with DevKit specifically. I mean, because actually I was talking to someone today about the software side from chip companies, right? He said something like, each dollar you spend on the software is a dollar taken away from the margin on the hardware, right?
Right.
So, and especially like a big chip maker, right? They are focused on the margin around the chip itself, right?
Well,
any support activity.
That's their business. They make money from selling chips, right?
And they make good money from it, right? And so anything that erodes that, it's, and I say good money they have priced in the margin or, supposed to be high just because they have a lot of support, you got to support the fab, support the sales staff, whatever. So, it's very common for people that don't regularly use dev boards, right? Especially if you're like buying them off, you buy them from an online distributor. It's surprising how many times they still show up with a DB9 port on them. And you're okay, where do I plug this in? My MacBook doesn't even have regular USBs anymore. So it's like, I got to...
Well, this one actually forces you to use the Chrome browser. So too bad if you don't like Chrome. Like, because it uses a Chrome plugin. You've got to install a Chrome plugin work. And you've got to install two different plugins before you can get the thing to talk to the TI cloud.
Wow. See, that is interesting too. That I think that a lot of the, a lot of the technology it follows the trend of available software engineers as much as anything else, right? And so that'll continue to happen. I think in that it might have been in the past you would have some application built for your so enough people were using Windows and you build this thing in Java because you can get Java programmers, no big deal. And now it's like, well, it's a lot easier to get a lot of JavaScript developers. And then you just get that one guy that ties the JavaScript implementation or the browser based implementation over to the hardware. And if that breaks, you're up a creek, Yeah.
Anyway, I'm totally deflated now. I was very excited. I plugged it in and I thought, I'll do a quick video on this. And nah. It's going to take days to solve this problem.
I've spent 2 or 3 days getting a dev kit off the ground.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's just to Blinky or just to
of course
to pulling
mine is just
in data
running
to
the out of the box demo like it's supposed to work out of the box and I almost went down the wrong rabbit hole because I opened the box and it gives you a nice little card which gives you a link to the the quick installation guide or the installment the dev kit manual or whatever. So I'm reading the dev kit manual, it says it's got all these demos and stuff. Right. And I go, great, this is exactly what I want. I want to be able to just a quick demo to see the radar system working. I can wave my hands in front of it.
Yeah, that's the thing they show that the software guy the sales guy show off. Right. That's what they want to do.
It's talking about all this stuff. And then it's going, it's available in the dev kit software. So I go look at the dev kit software and I'm going, oh, shit, look at all this. So I downloaded it and it's all the source code. Like there's no executable to run. And then I'm going, shit, I've got to install Code Composer, which is thing to do this. And I thought, this can't be right. And I eventually stumbled upon a demo video that they had online of this thing and show you how the out-of-the-box experience works. And they go, just go to this web address and you use this online cloud thing and it just works. And it's a serial port. You don't have to install the Code Composer and all that. And I went, dolt. That wasn't clear out of the box.
Right, exactly.
I think it's one. It might be one tiny line in the installation manual or something, but it's like it's non-obvious. So I almost went down the rabbit hole of installing Code Composer and running, compiling code and doing all sorts of stuff when I didn't have to.
Right. And that's what it is. It's like, I've been in that situation too, where it's like, you basically like, you flail, and then you look for, you know, you start Googling, you find a forum post, you're like, oh, that's close
your
enough.
Knowledge kicks in, right? Then your technical knowledge kicks in, and you go, oh, I can solve this, right?
Like that, you mean? Oh,
right,
yeah.
Like it goes, right. Oh, yeah, it must be this. It must be this, right? Yeah. I can do this, right?
I've seen this one before. And this looks, you start pattern matching. You're like, oh, this is probably, I probably have to rebuild the Windows kernel.
Right. Or something like, you just, like, your mind just goes to the most complex issue it could be, you know, because you're a technical person, and that just instantly pops into your head, all these technical things that can go wrong, and you think it must be that, and you go down that rabbit hole, and you just go insane. Yeah, they put you in a straitjacket. Anyway,
so, I've had a fun
work.
I've had a fun a side project as you've been talking here too. I found 5 separate tweets where you're talking about how Windows 10 borked your computer.
Right.
Don't say Chris Campbell doesn't follow up on things, folks.
Yes, but never has it not recovered.
Never.
Never.
Right.
Never has it totally nuked my hard drive that I cannot even repair it.
Wait, let's see. I can find that one.
There's been quite a few Windows issues.
Tried to update
over
Windows 10 and we couldn't. Wait, is this recent? No, this is August 2015.
Oh, yeah, that was on my. Yeah. I tried to update Windows 10 on my Xeon machine here, and it doesn't support my board. It doesn't support my dual Xeon motherboard.
Man.
Which is not surprising. I don't blame it for that.
Twitter. Yeah, good old
Twitter. I was just having a bitch because I wasted half a day trying to do it, you know.
Okay, don't worry. I'm not going to hold it against you. Well, we all know that, using a computer and high-level software is not as simple as blinking a light bulb.
No. How do you blink a light bulb? You can't do it mechanically, I've heard.
Yeah, so we were before the show. We were watching Krasnow's latest video, and then we found all the other entries. This is a weird ass prize, but I kind of love it. I mean, it's just like it's reminiscent.
Tell us the contest, son.
Yeah, it's the Flashing Light Prize 2017. I have no idea who started this. I probably should have read this.
Right, it's probably in the fac or something. You know, I don't know.
Grand prize of £200. So obviously they're.
They're a
pommies. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
And they're flashing systems on Twitter.
Yes.
That's all
Brockcraft,
we know.
Peter Knight, and James Larson will be the judges. These are all the things that we're literally reading off the website right now. But what we've been seeing is a lot of fun projects pop up, and it's making me reminisce for the days of the 555 contest.
Yeah, the 555 contest you would be a...
What? A bitch and a half to...
A bitch and a half to...
To administer,
To manage, and you admitted I was right in the end.
Yeah, you were right in the end. That is correct.
Yep.
There's one for you, buddy. There's one. But already there's been...
Who are the judges? Peter Knight and James Larson. They don't ring a bell. I'm sorry if
should
ring a bell.
I'll try and find them on Twitter later.
Right. Yep.
But yeah, so we found this because... Well, I've seen people, intermittently talking about it on Twitter.
The only reason
Ben,
I found this because it popped up on Mike. Mike did a video and then...
Yeah, Mike was doing one. Right, exactly.
And then Applied Science Ben Krasnow popped up.
I
went, what's this?
Yeah, so lots of fun entries. And we found out it's going till August 1st. So if you're listening to this... And it's not August 1st, 2017. You too can flash a light bulb. So we were trying to figure out. So you said no mechanicals, right?
Apparently, you're not allowed to do it mechanically. It has to be electrically done.
Right. Yes.
And I haven't watched all of Mike's video, but I think he used a relay. So I'm not sure if that's allowed.
Right.
Or not.
Well, they're saying no shutters though too. So you can't just block the light and then move it, right?
Yes, you can't block the light. Right. The filament has to go off and on. It's got to be a filament, none of this lead rubbish, right?
Right.
It's got to,
too modern. Too modern.
Yep.
Well, you had an interesting idea.
Maybe
we don't want to give this away, huh?
I know I'm going to give it away.
I mean, where
are
you
going to
get
here.
One, right? Where are you going to get one?
Yeah, I'm going to blow my wad here. Okay. I thought it was too easy. To make it too easy and obvious to make it this world's smallest or the world's
too
lowest
easy.
Part count.
Yeah, you didn't watch Ben's video.
Right. it's just too obvious, right? So I would go for the biggest or the most complicated. So I had an idea, find an abandoned lighthouse and then flash that sucker at a half a hertz.
Come on, Andy.
Or,
Come on, photonic induction. Yeah, I know. We know you're out there.
It's totally a photonic induction thing. Yeah. or make it like the most ridiculously complex way to flash a filament bulb possible. You know.
Right, like a Rube Goldberg style.
Goldberg style flasher. Yeah, but then that's going to be mechanical. So it'd have to be an electrical. Rube Goldberg.
Maybe you could like have or it like hot from.
Whether or not it can be mechanical, and then the actual flashing is electrical, that might be allowed. You see.
See, and this is why it's hard to run contests, because then a-holes like us, we go and ask these questions.
Yeah, I know. We just want to.
You got to really plan for every contingency and every stupid
idea. Yeah, like that come from people like us. You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it does look like fun though, so I'm looking forward to seeing all these prizes.
There's quite a few entries already, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, don't get discouraged. I think the thing that I like about this, and whenever I talk about contests, right, like the thing that I always think is the reason the 555 contest was even remotely interesting, and it was Jerry's idea in the first place, right? So I take no credit.
We discussed it on the Amp Hour. Didn't we come up with the idea on the Amp Hour or something, or after an Amp Hour episode or something?
I don't remember. I just credit it all to Jerry. So the thing that's interesting about it is just that like having like one simple constraint like that, right? So that's great. Yep. And then I think Hackaday did the square centimeter contest or something like that, square inch contest.
Right.
Yeah.
And we always wanted to do the 1K code contest.
The 1K. And I think someone did something like that.
I think
like
someone
that.
Might have eventually done one, but we've been wanting to do that since like we first started the show. I think we had the idea for that. You know, give us your best project in 1K of code.
Right.
You know.
Right. And if other people want to do
David,
it, they
are. David here is nodding his head. David over here, he's going, yep, I'll enter that. Employees of EEV Blog are not allowed to enter if I run it. Oh, sad face.
No, I think Hackaday would do one of these too. Let's see.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
1K code. And of course, you have to do it in assembler because like there's no other way to fit.
We don't have to. It's just you're not going to do as much interesting things.
Yeah, you probably can't do as much stuff.
Right. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so those kind of like constraints are really fun. I
love
like
the constraint-based contests are good. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because like the ones where it's like super open, like the, I mean, even I guess an X Prize is constrained is just a ridiculous constraint of like, go to the moon or whatever they're doing the lunar X Prize stuff like that.
The lunar X Prize, the other extreme, which they failed unfortunately. The one that I was involved with, which was the Audi Lunar Quattro one. You remember it came to my lab. They actually bought the actual lunar rover to my lab. The huge
Rover, right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they finally had to pull out. That was like 6 months ago or something. They had to. Yep. So sadly, I think it's still technically it goes until the end of this year, doesn't it?
I thought it went until it went. You know what I mean? Like
I think there was a deadline.
Oh, okay.
Whether or not they're going to extend it, I'm not sure, but we'll have to check the Lunar X Prize website.
Yeah, and there are different X Prizes as well. So,
yeah.
Oh yeah, you can go to xprize.org, and then there's active prizes. So there's Google Lunar X Prize. You get $30 million for 5 teams. They're in the testing and certification phase. There's the Learning X Prize. Oh wow, these are cool.
The literacy Audi Quattro won one of those prizes. It was like it won one of the stage prizes or something.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to spend some time on this. This is cool.
Mm.
So we'll put a link in. There's a bunch of active stuff. They're in different phases though, and stuff like that. Boy, there's a lot of money here. What am I doing talking to you, man? We should go build something.
We'll just start from scratch and build.
Just jump in whenever. Yeah.
A lunar.
Yeah.
Rover. Yeah.
Blah blah blah. Send something to
no
the moon.
No problem.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Yeah. Well, good luck to people doing the flashing lights thing. You can win not millions. But hundreds of pounds.
Fortune and glory, kid. Fortune
That's
and
right.
glory.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
Great stuff.
But we should mention as well, since I brought up the 555 contest and Jerry, the unfortunate but true news. It has been verified.
It's about a week and a bit old now.
Yeah, of course.
We didn't do a show last week. We probably could have, and we would have been Johnny on the spot with the news, but it's old news now.
We've never really been that timely,
No, we haven't. Stupid weekly schedule, Like, five companies go bust in a week.
Right, exactly.
In
right.
our industry, you know, it's like, right. can't right. even keep up. Yeah, sadly, Cast AR, Jerry's company, Technical Illusions, or formerly Technical Illusions, has shut its doors. It's insolvent. It's just, bam, Gonski.
Gonski, yep.
Yeah, and based on Jerry, well, I haven't actually spoken to her apart from a tweet that she replied to me. I right. think it's she said, her, she said her she only has free tweet time on now, the issue. So, she yeah. has free time, so presumably she was marched out the door with the rest of them.
Oh, I don't think there's that. No, come on. It's,
well,
I mean,
no. Like, she's still a shareholder, right? She's yeah, still yeah, like yeah. a huge shareholder. Right.
But it takes a while to shut that stuff down.
Yeah, but obviously, based on her tweet, they're probably not still working on stuff. I think they're.
No, I can't imagine they are. I'm sure they're just shopping
around.
They're
shopping the company around. Right. But whether or not it sounds like. See, there's two ways to shop a company around. You shop the company, which is just the IP. Right, which is right. just the patents that they have,
yep,
which she took from Valve. You know, Valve gave it to them, gave it to her in a nice gesture and said, "Here you go, they're your patents," and which of course she would have had to, which she has signed over the rights to when she took all the investment capital in. So right. Jerry doesn't own the patents anymore. She's just a shareholder in the company.
Right, any kind of yeah, and that's how it's designed yeah. too, so that,
that yeah, exactly.
they can't
so
go after them, right? So
yeah, right.
Yeah.
So the company owns the patents. So the company owns the IP, and Jerry's just now a shareholder in the company, just like you know a bunch of right. others. And so yeah, there's two ways to shop a company: either shop it just based on its IP, like that's the only thing that people want, the IP. To sell the patents, sell any other tech. Which you may have prototypes or systems or whatever, code or whatever. And the other is to sell the talent or a combination of both.
Right, an acqui-hire, as they call it.
Acqui-hire, is that what it's called?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's usually when there's less than valuable IP, but you really want to get the employees. So
you want to get the employees,
buy it,
yeah.
So another company will buy it for a token amount with right. the, you know, basically like an employment contract that
right.
incentivizes
so whether
people
or not,
to stay.
I'd be interested to know whether or not, like, Jerry is done with it or whether or not like she would go with the company or other talent, you know, Rick and other talent would go with the company if they were able to sell it for presumably pennies on the dollar because maybe
sure.
because they're in desperate straits, like they're out of business. So, you know, it's not like they're in a commanding position to, you know, sell the company. It's basically entering a formal liquidation. So presumably some sort of firm will come in and manage the sale of the assets, be they IP or talent, I guess. But
right.
I don't know. It's complex legal stuff, I'm sure.
Right.
Which yep. we have no idea about.
Well, and another thing about companies too is that sometimes the when the corporate structure set up and all the funding set up, the people that are doing the funding get their money back first, that kind of thing. So
oh yeah, right.
I'm sure that
But they don't have any money. Well, yes. So when they sell it off, if they just sell off the IP, then the money goes to the right. original investors first.
Yep.
So that'd all be in the contracts and whatnot. But
so, anyways,
we'll try and catch up with Jerry. Liquidation.
Yeah.
They take their $1 million chunk, probably. You know that they take their big, very lucrative to, you know. I joked on Twitter the other day. Somebody who was shutting down Theranos, was it Theranos?
Snake oil.
Yeah, anyway, it was one of those, you know, ridiculous companies that were going to fail anyway. And there's this company that specializes in just selling the assets.
That's right, like the chairs.
And they had like 500 chairs and 500 monitors and like desks
right.
and stuff.
No, that, and that's the thing, like that's one yeah, of the, they said that was like one of the hottest startups in Silicon Valley is the people who liquidate startups that fail.
Yes. So I tweeted that and yeah, I thought that was, yep.
Yep,
hmm.
That's fun. Yeah, well, I mean, I saw a bunch of the people that were Cast AR folks. They came to my meetup that was out.
Oh,
not
okay.
my meetup,
oh,
the
right.
meetup that I run out in San Francisco, and right. So I got to talk to some of them. But you know, sounded like it was unfortunate and, but not wholly yeah. unexpected yeah. from what I could tell. You know,
my spidey sense was saying it was just too long without hearing anything. I can understand the stealth aspect of it, but it was just I don't know.
I always wonder about that kind of stuff. You know, like,
yeah, I was hoping, obviously, that, oh, they'd magically, you know, at the end of it, come out with this, you know, they'd win. But they simply ran out of money. And that's what happens. Like, once the money literally runs out overnight, or, you know, like, we've got a week's worth of money left and there's no more investment.
Runway, it's called, Dave. Runway.
Yeah. Runway, is it? Yes. Right. And they don't, and that's the problem with a company that's not actually selling anything, that doesn't have any income stream. It's just everything's outgoing. You know, they're just bleeding cash until they either get bought out.
They'd also brought on a game studio and stuff as well.
Right.
So,
but yeah. I don't think they had any income, right?
No.
So, yep. Yeah.
Well, we'll try and get Jerry on again at some point in the future.
That'd be cool.
Yep.
So to find out all the gory details of that, but that's a shame. So.
Yeah, that's what happens with the old raising money and stuff.
Yeah, once the money runs out, game over. Game over, man. Sorry. I can't do the accent.
What's that from?
Aliens. Alien.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Yeah. Game over, man. What? You've never seen Alien?
Nope.
Oh, what?
Sorry.
Oh.
I don't like alien movies.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
I'm just, they freak me out, so.
Oh, God. Oh. You'll get a cop a bunch of abuse over that.
Well, I can always edit it out, maybe. Right. yeah.
Anyway.
So. You know what doesn't scare me?
What?
This is a terrible segue coming. cheaper cables. I'm actually really interested in this. So Ian, who we've had on the show before, from Dangerous Prototypes, he's been living in Shenzhen for a couple years now. And they keep kind of busting out new services, kind of interfacing the maker world to the Shenzhen world.
The Shenzhen world, yep.
Yeah, and this is another... So they've got, like, dirty PCBs and dirty laser cuts and... I didn't know they did dirty PCBs.
I didn't know they...
Yeah. That's all Dangerous Prototypes. Okay. So they do dirty PCBs. Right. Okay. They have, like, a 3D printing service, and I think they have a laser cutter service, which is... Right. And maybe even stencils or something.
Right.
But just, you know, basically taking advantage of the super low-cost, on-site... manufacturing capabilities and then interfacing it to the rest of the world, handling logistics and shipping and all that other stuff. But
so
this is probably
new
one
solves a big pain point.
Exactly. And this is what I'm most interested in, is because, well, it's not even, I guess this has been about a month, a little bit, well, a couple weeks old now, but it's called Dirty Cables. And basically you can go and spec out a cable type and then they'll get it made. And well, yeah, like you alluded to, the pain point is just handling cabling is... I mean, I used to do that too. And
you want
terrible.
A custom cable in your product. You want a custom board-to-board interconnect cable. You know, it's got like a Molex connector on each end and you want it a specific length and colors and, you know, number of wires and everything. Like, you can't buy them off the shelf usually, you know?
Well, I think we've talked about it in the past, I was buying the Seed Studio with the Grove connector, which is a 4-pin JST 2mm.
But Murphy will ensure that it's not suitable for your particular project and you've got to go custom, right?
Oh, maybe. I mean, I designed literally around that, though. Like, that was the idea.
Yeah,
that not around the connector, but around the cable, the assembled
cable
which you could buy.
Yeah, because you could buy it for 50 cents or whatever.
Exactly. And, like, it was a SKU on the shelf. Like, that's what I targeted because, like you said...
SKU, for those who don't know, SKU, stock keeping unit. It means basically in stock item. That you can just buy off the shelf.
Well, yeah, it's like it's a unique identifier of a product that someone's making. It means when someone says off the shelf, it's going to have a SKU, right? So
You can specify that in your bill of materials. You just go, it's this manufacturer, this part number, this SKU number,
right? And that's instead of and if you go and make your own cable and then you sell it to someone else, you're going to also give it an SKU because you want to. So, anyways, but I think that is totally. You know, it's not always the right solution, right? Sometimes you will have a custom cabling need, but you're going to pay for it in pain and AutoCAD drawings.
Oh, you've just got to deal with the company and you've got to,
Well, and stateside, trying to get like a cable manufacturing stateside, I mean, this is just a really intensive amount of work, right? And so, So for people that don't know, like if you want to get a cable made, usually you got to go and find someone with the right cable crimping machine, right? Crimping is like the people have probably done that before. You could buy a hand crimper, but your forearm will quickly cramp up. Crimper becomes cramper. that was terrible. And then you have like a special type of metal crimp that basically mechanically bonds to the wires because you're creating a pressure seal between the metal of the crimp and the metal of the wire. And then once you do that, you have to then go and insert that now crimped wire end and or wire ends more likely into some kind of housing that will actually end up being the plug. So like all those actions, it's terrible. It's really, really terrible. And so
you want someone to do all that crap. You don't want to be you're crimping your own cables, you're doing it wrong.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's okay for one prototype, but right. if you can design in the cables.
Maybe if you're making 10 units or something, it's okay, right. But you know.
Right. Or if you have like really custom, if you have like a really custom need, like say you need a cable run that's like 200 meters, right? You probably are willing to put the stuff on the end because you're not going to be able to buy some off the shelf 200 meter cable with like a, you know, a 4-pin JST.
We had to do that all the time when I was working in our production environments. Like we'd have all these customized test jigs with these massive 100-way cables, and we'd have to do our own cable looms and solder on the cable connectors. And I have fond memories of doing that. Getting your 100-way connector backwards.
Right.
Because you use the left facing diagram instead of the right facing diagram.
Right. And what's the most what's the most important piece of equipment in that scenario?
Time.
No, a label maker.
Label maker.
Yeah, man, label every single Sanity. Wire. Each wire has its own label. Yep.
But which means jack shit if you get it back to front.
That's true. Yes, you're right.
Man, it was like, you know, like because right. we any, had lit. Oh, anyway.
Any industrial Terrific. Field engineers, like they know they're cringing in
they're
pain right now too.
Nodding their head.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yep.
Yep. Soldered that D25 backwards. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So, anyways, this is exciting. I'd love to hear if people have done this. I haven't tried it yet. I will at some point. So
I'm sure it just happens very smoothly. You pay your money and you get your cables. You give them a diagram and you know.
Well, there's an online like builder basically.
Oh, so online builder. Oh,
it's like a drag and drop.
Right. Wow, fancy pantsy.
So yeah, this is exciting. Seeing, you know, we'll need to try it out. And like I said, if anyone's tried it out already, would love to hear about it. Yep. There is a sample kit as well. Yeah, there's a sample kit available in the store for $9.95. So if you want to see what you can actually get in terms of
can they do any type of connector you like? Can you just specify?
No. Right. There's this fixed menu. But,
oh, okay.
But that's the best thing, man. I mean, like, you should really...
Yeah, no, because your decision's made for you, right?
Right, exactly. It's a constraint system, right? That's what you really want.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I wish them the best. Excellent. What else is on the list? Well, once your cable's done, what else do you need? Dave.
I don't know. You're going to tell us, obviously.
You need an on-device voice assistant.
You don't. No,
pretty much the same.
No, you don't.
No. This is interesting. This is a new one. We had talked about what was it called? It was called Jarvis, I think. There was a Jarvis one. It was based on Raspberry Pi, or is installed on Raspberry Pi. And this is another one called SNPs. I don't know what the hell it stands for. Probably some kind of acronym. But basically, the interesting thing about this, right? So this kind of gets back to what I ended up talking to John Oxer about with like security and with connecting all over the world. You know, if you want, so say like, say you personally, Dave, were going to get an Alexa, right? Like all these internet connected, whatever, Alexa.
Why the hell would I get one of those?
Just play along for a second. But say you were going to, all right, I'm going to get an Alexa, right? I'm going to get the Echo or the, there's a new one, the screen that's kind of looks like the Chumby. But basically, you know, you say like, oh, I'm going to mess with people now. Alexa, turn on the light, right? Or Alexa, buy a dollhouse.
Flash my filament bulb at 0.5 hertz.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, right. Alexa, turn on. Alexa, turn off. We just won the contest. sorry to anyone who actually has one in their vicinity. But the idea being that, okay, so like following the chain of like, so you're talking to the device, it's listening for the trigger word, here's the trigger word on device, you know, it has probably some kind of chip on device listening for that trigger word, and then it sends off a request to the cloud. The cloud then talks back down to your Philips Hue bulb or whatever it is, and then, exactly, right.
Is and there the problem a point is, here?
The problem is that
when it's just stupid.
It's what John talked about, is when the internet goes out, your bulb doesn't work, which is stupid. Yes, you were correct about that. But the idea is, if you're going to build an in-house assistant, right? So again, this is what we were talking to John about a bunch. I was talking to John about. Someone did skip the show. then you can create like a more local network, right? So then basically you could just go over Wi-Fi. That's really the idea. Is that's what needs to happen for faster response time. The difference being that, you know, if you need to get some kind of like neuro-linguistic processing NLP unit on board, it's not going to be as good as something that's trained against lots and lots of different words, like a Google assistant or an Alexa assistant or whatever. So that's the whole point.
It's also not going to be as good as just a mechanical switch.
Yeah, that's true. Who did I talk to about that? I met up with someone. It was someone in San Francisco. They said they were installing a new thing in their house. Oh, it was Joe, one of the guys who's given a bunch of talks out there. Hmm. He was saying he just installed a bunch of new stuff. He's like, yeah, and I just did it with digital stuff. I'm like, you're going to rue that day.
Can you foresee a future where, you know, all the self-driving cars and all this Alexa bloody voice commanded
computer
lights bullshit?
Computer,
right?
Hello, computer.
Can you envisage a future where there will be a whole community of people who will just like not want to do this out of like principle, just because it's like I don't know, they might be called old schoolers or something. I don't know. They might be just like resist all this automation shit because it's just like.
You mean like the Amish?
I don't know. What the new modern version of the digital Amish?
The digital Amish. I like that. Yeah.
TM. There's a T-shirt. Digital Amish. I'm a digital Amish.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Right.
All right. No, I'm an automation Amish or something.
There you go. What, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like I can picture people.
Yeah, of course. Like, I mean, it already is happening, you know, right?
Well, right. It's like,
give me an interface
already,
or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably examples out there that aren't immediately coming to mind. I'm sure there's people who, you know, don't just, you know, like are refusing to use technology just because, like, even though they can, it's just, like they just don't want to, and it's just becoming too much and. Like they just
think they're
like
called
the
old people, Dave.
Of,
old people.
No. There's
you're rapidly entering this group. I mean, there are some benefits to it, but yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, like I don't know. I don't think it's gonna be any kind of like groundswell thing. I think it'll just be like, yeah, some people will, some people won't. The things that are actually useful, yeah, there is benefit to doing some of this stuff.
I think it's unavoidable for the things that are genuinely universally.
Sure.
Useful, yeah. And it's just stupid to do it any other way but automated. Then it, you know, it'll win out. But you know, there I think there will be a lot of stuff that will be, you know, people will just want to do it the old-fashioned way because it's just better and simpler. Like a light switch will always be better, simpler, cheaper, more reliable than any automation system in the future.
I don't argue with that.
There will always be value in the light switch, for example. I cannot envisage a future where an automated light switch is so fundamentally better concept that you'd just be dumb to use a light switch.
I think the main thing being
I can't see it.
It's like it's because we're thinking in terms of like systems that we know now, right? You can't imagine what would be a good example? You can't imagine, using a PC when using one of those paper reel calculators worked great, right? Because the paper on the paper reel calculator is always cheaper than buying a new computer. However, most people don't use a computer to do, you know, adding sums and stuff like that for accounting. Hmm. The idea is that it's just going to open. It's going to be some new opportunity is going to make it. You know, I think the thing is that the actual opportunity, we're thinking in terms of light switches, but the actual opportunity in, say, lighting is probably stuff that we haven't thought of yet. I don't know what that would be, but I assume that most of the applications that will actually make anything like this catch on have not been invented yet and or have not hit the mainstream yet. So,
Yet to
I have
be
to apologize as well. Apparently, the fireworks here, it's July 5th, and apparently the fireworks are not over. Either that or it's just the usual Chicago gunfire, one of the two.
Right. It's that semi-automatic fireworks. Yeah. You're right.
I was thinking about it. So, you know, like... you know, Chicago has a legitimate gun problem, which I don't joke about.
It's one of the highest.
Yeah, it's really bad. But I was thinking about, so Alicia from Embedded, she used to work on the ShotSpotter, right? Which was like this cool system that would just, you know, record instances of like high impulse sound.
It's a website, right? And it maps it, doesn't it? Or
it maps
something.
It, but there's hardware involved as well.
Right.
But I was
okay,
just thinking about like, man, around this time of year, it's got to just be going nuts. Like, talk about false positives.
Isn't there like an app on your phone or something that you can tie? I think I saw this just recently. App on your phone that can tie into that ShotSpotter or something.
Oh,
that
probably.
That can then, like, if there's a, you know, like a public shooting incident, like everyone, like your app kicks in and it tells you where the gunshots are coming from.
Oh,
or some
interesting.
Shit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that would be
something
that would be
like
good.
That.
Yeah, like kind of like one of those alerts that your phone can't ignore. That'd be good.
Only in America.
Sadly, yes.
Pretty much.
But
yeah.
We'll move on from that. Anyway. But yeah, just false positives.
Right.
So, yeah, so I don't know. I just think, so this kind of system is interesting because it seems pretty accessible. You know, I've seen, well, we've had, were you on the show when Gerald and Bertrand were on? They were Audim. Do you remember them?
Well, I don't know. I've done too many shows.
Well, we had those guys on the show, and they were doing a similar thing where it was like, it was on, I think it was a MediaTek processor, maybe what's the other cheaper one? It's either MediaTek or the other cheap one, like the BM, whatever. Broadcom right. or someone else, but it was like an A11, A13 processor, and basically they had put some of this stuff onto
all,
hardware.
All winner, perhaps. Maybe it's the all winner.
Oh, it might have been all. Yeah, you're right. It might have been all winner.
Yeah,
that's the other one. And yeah, so I don't know. Like it's. I think there is a lot of value to you know, doing this stuff on hardware. If you're going to do voice, I think it is good to put it locally. In terms of whether or not voice is actually needed, that's a different question, right? So,
right,
like you said,
right.
There are always going to be the digital Amish. I'm sure that I'm talking to one of them. but I think, you know, like the more I use it, the more it's... there are some nice uses, you know? Not like there are very first world problems that I'm solving, right? Like, oh, right. I've got avocado on my hand and I need to turn on the radio or turn on my podcast, right? It's like, okay, come on, Chris.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, it's nice. I get a lot less avocado on my phone.
Smashed avocado, first world problem.
Yes, yeah. Right. Avocado
Sorry,
toast.
We,
the scourge of the Aussies.
Right, that's a
that's why you
that's
can't afford
Aussie
real estate
houses.
In Australia.
Yes, you know all about it. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It's an Aussie smashed avocado. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Aussies will get the joke. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, they talk about it here now too. I see it all over.
Oh,
here
really?
Now.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's stupid.
Right, it sort of made its way over the pond.
Yeah.
It?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Indeed.
It's a great metric, you know.
Yeah.
Google it. Smashed avocado on houses. Can we stop talking about freaking automated voice command crap?
Sure. What else?
It makes me want to go and rewatch Firefox. Is it Firefox?
Firefly?
With the movie Firefox.
Firefox.
Firefox with oh goodness.
This is why he's in the old group, folks.
Clint Eastwood, Firefox. He 1982, where he's a pilot and he goes and steals this Russian you know, this new Russian jet or the new Russian spy plane, and he has to command it, and he's got to think like it's all this super automated thing, and it's like it can read like you've got to think to turn left, and it turns
right.
Left, you know, kind of, yeah. And he had to think in Russian to be able to actually so that the system would, you know, because he couldn't think in English and then translate it,
right,
he had
to think
in Russian, and that's the only way to, you know, this helmet super automated plane. Anyway, yep. Got to watch that again. Firefox.
Classic. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, that was, yeah. Yes, that was a very that was very high tech, like very futuristic at the time to think, you can control an aircraft with your thoughts. You know, that was like, you know, really, yeah, really beyond its time. So,
yeah. Yep.
Anyway.
Well, let's talk about more shit shutting down, huh?
Oh, yeah, why not? Yeah, doom and gloom in the industry. Here we go. Yeah. Come on. That's what we need.
Intel killed all their stuff. Did you see that stuff? That
no, was a while.
Again, this is old news.
Oh, yes, yes. Intel killed all their Internet of Things dev boards. They realized Internet of Things was full of shit, and they went, nah, we're just getting out of this business. This is embarrassing.
Right, so Jewel, Galileo, Edison.
I don't want to put... Did you find out why they did? What's the reason? Because all I heard is that they shut down, the Intel Edison, all their Internet of Things development boards. You know, they made a big splash a couple of years ago. We now no doubt talked about it. And said, wow, Intel are getting into this Internet of Things, and now they've gone, nope.
I'm guessing the answer is money. Money and lack of adoption.
Right,
also, the fact that
adoption,
nobody could use the Galileo and the Edison. It's like these... all right, here's my thing. I was thinking about this today. Intel has gotten in and out of the embedded business like 5 times. And I don't know if you would call this in the embedded business.
Intel started in the embedded business.
Sure, right. But they also got out of it.
A lot of people don't realize that.
They will get... And here's the thing. They're going to do this again.
Of course they will.
In a couple
5 years
years
down the track, they'll be
they're
going
to do it again, right? Especially with ARM doing as well as it has been
We'll be in our twilight years, and we'll still be talking about them doing it.
But here's the thing. It's great. I knew this was going to happen as soon as I saw they had all this stuff out. They threw a lot of money at this, and you know, to their credit, they tried, they supported.
Well, they did it really well. They did it. They made it Windows compatible Arduino thing or something. It was like, really? They put a lot of effort into it.
Sure. And but this is going to happen again, and you're going to get taken again. Sorry to people who did it, right? And the thing is, they went after people that were software people that were looking to get into hardware, and so they could put Windows 10 on it, and that made a lot of sense,
too. It was another bandwagon that they wanted to jump on, because somebody at Intel wanted to justify their job, and, let's jump on this bandwagon. And they got big pat on the back and a pay rise, and they're probably off to some other shit now.
Right. Well, so, I talked earlier about the margin of a chip company, right? And you get into these small things. Like, people making ARM chips are not making a ton of margin, right?
No, crazy. It's a cutthroat business.
And Intel is used to making a ton of margin. And this, again, I will give my prediction like I always do. This is the only prediction I consistently make. Intel is going to break off their server business, their chip-making business from everything else, because... I just think that if they ever want to do anything else from an IP basis, especially doing like taking on ARM, which they'll have to eventually do.
The board of directors will eventually kill it because it's not making enough margin compared to all
the
other business
units. It's like you compare
the
old business to the new business, why aren't you like that? And it's like, well, I can't be like that because it's not the 90s.
That happens in every business. That happens in every big business because the board of directors, they look at all the business, you know, when you've got a company this big, you've got
business
units.
Dave's about to say fiduciary. He's going to say fiduciary.
They do have fiduciary responsibility. That is correct.
Every time. Every friggin' time. He loves saying it.
Yeah. Because it's the way of the world. It's why companies, you know, are run like they are.
Yep.
Because it's run for the shareholder benefit. It's not run for the public good. It's not run for feel good. If you want to run a feel good company, you don't go public, right? You don't have shareholders.
Right.
Otherwise... It's a legal responsibility. I'll go through it again.
No,
it's
please
a
don't.
Legal
please
responsibility.
Don't. Please don't.
Anyway, so look at Google it. Fiduciary responsibility.
Right. Yes.
And if
so
you want to know,
we should
why
also say that the there is no news about the Curie. So we're just reading off Hackaday here.
I thought it was all of them.
No, Curie's still no announcement on the demise of Curie. So
anyway, they didn't just abandon it. By the way, they actually give you, like, it's been phased out by the end of the year, and they do actually have a last buy. So they are doing it properly. They are phasing it buys on these boards. You can buy 100,000 of these development boards. We'll make them for you. Just give us the order, you know.
Right.
Wouldn't it be ironic if the last orders came in and actually made it viable?
That's how it usually goes, right? And then they go, wait a second.
It wouldn't be the first time, A chip company's gone, last buys on this chip. You know, we're shutting this down. And then all of a sudden they get an order for 10 million chips. And it's back in business. It's popular again.
Right.
And we'll keep that one in stock.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Sorry to anyone who's developing on that. But, I mean, this is... I mean, Yeah. I guess it's a good time to bring up. It's not just Intel, right? It's not like, oh, Intel shut this. Chip companies do this stuff all the time, and you should always be cognizant of it. And, you know, I always tell the people that I'm teaching on my course, I'm like, look, it's always going to be a guessing game.
Chip companies are better than this. They're not as fickle as this. I mean, this almost comes into the fickle territory. You know, it's only been 2 years or something.
I don't really know. Is it only, Ben? Are you sure?
I don't know. I'm probably not too far off, but... Anyway.
See what the old wiki has to say. I think that I don't know. You should always be careful with this stuff, right? Any line can shut down. And I, like I said, I always try and teach students that like you're gonna do a best guess, right? You try and go for a popular part that might not be shut down, and you can. And well, when we had Bunny on the first time, right? He always talked about like trying to design stuff in that was in an iPhone 4 because that lowered the cost. But again, there's no guarantee that certain parts won't get replaced with other ones and whatever, right? There's always a chance of an obsolescence. Right. So, you know, make your code portable. That's a good way to, as much as you can, right? Document your projects as much as you can.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, the modern computing architectures, like the Edisons and everything else, right? The Raspberry Pis and all the rest of them, right? They're so powerful that you're crazy not to use these in your product to, you know, if you've got a real power hungry, like, you know, internet connected product, like it makes sense to use these boards. But the problem in your final, like if you're, you might build a whole company around the fact that you're going to put a Raspberry Pi in something, you've got some neat application that runs on the Raspberry Pi, and right, you can build a $10 million business making these things, right? But you're totally reliant upon the continued manufacture of that board. And if they're not completely open source, like the Raspberry Pi is not open source, for example, if they suddenly stop making it or abandon that version of the product and you can't port it over to something, you know, you're forced to port it over or you're forced to go out of business.
Yeah.
Because
right,
you can't get
right.
that board anymore. You've based your product around that module. It's no different to basing your product around some custom whiz bang chip from Texas Instruments or somebody else, right?
Yeah. I'd say the only difference is that, at least with a board, if you're doing it at a board level, you can maybe have a connector, and that becomes your, you know, your interface. That's your that's your abstraction is through the connector. That's probably one of the better things about, you know, things like an Arduino or, you know, even like a Teensy is a different version. It uses the Arduino IDE.
So you have a daughter board that's the same, yeah, so it doesn't matter whether there's a Raspberry Pi on there or there's an Arduino or there's something
else. You can always redesign it with some other chip in the future onto a board that plugs in, but then the trade-off there is...
is increased cost and complexity.
Exactly. Or size too, right? I mean,
or size
you've got more
as
stuff.
Well, of course. Yeah, yeah you've got, yeah. You know, you've got these big pin headers or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is literally a decision that had me... that I made for the header that I talked about many episodes ago now, just because it future proofs you a little bit. It's never going to be completely future proof, but it, you know, by dumbing down the features a little bit and by, you know, or reducing the number of features rather, and then putting it through some kind of simple interface, then you can at least rework it later. And I can't tell you the number of projects that when I was working on obsolete products, it's like, yeah, your best case scenario is you put some kind of landing pads around that chip you're trying to replace. And then as that, you know, especially like that's an intermediate step, right? So you have a chip and then you have the headers around the chip or the pin landings around the chip. And then eventually, you know, you make two boards, right? You make two full products and then you put them side by side and the old product has the old chip and the new product has that plugged in board. And that's how you test that it does the exact same thing, because that's all that really matters in keeping those things alive, you know?
It's safe to do these things with some things, like, for example, an ESP8266 module, right? Because they're so ubiquitous. You can buy them from every man and his dog, right? Yeah. And that, you know, that's something you don't really have to worry about. And, of course, you can duplicate the board yourself as long as you can still get the actual chip. Like, buying the module is nothing, because you can always relay out that module yourself and just buy the chip and get it soldered and made. But are the Intel boards open... I can't even remember if they're open source. Are they open source enough that people could actually take the Intel Atom processor and actually make their own Intel Edison board? Like, are they that, you know?
Prototype with open source hardware and software. I'm just looking on here. Honestly, I have no idea.
Right.
Open source is mentioned once, so.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, all these things are built for... So they have a standardized header, it looks like, as well. So, I mean, in the worst case scenario, you buy what looks like a Samtec header, and you get a replacement there.
Yeah, exactly. And you put a new, and you put your own Intel Atom processor on there, or whatever's in the Edison, and you know.
Yeah, right.
Hmm.
Yep. The only constant, Dave, in our lives is change.
Except for the 555 timer.
Except for the 555. Oh, nice one. Yeah. Well, it does change a little bit, it looks like.
Apparently, there's enough margin in the 555 timer, probably the most ubiquitous chip in the world, for fakes.
Right. Right. Yeah, so ZeptoBars is doing some... one of our favorite capturers
we love ZeptoBars website.
Of die shots and everything. Yeah.
They're the masters of the die shot.
Yes. And apparently, yeah, there are fakes, but man, how much can they be making on this, right?
I don't know. And, well, that's the thing, right? Not only are they fake, but they actually brand them as TI. They brand them as genuine TI. It's like, wow.
Well, you know, a bit of silk screen is pretty cheap, so that part's
easy. Yeah, it is. But like, why wouldn't, you know, if you're going to...
Right, build your own brand. Build your own 555 brand, right?
It's like, you know, there can't be that many people out there desperate. Oh, I must specify in the Texas Instruments 555, you know.
And things like this make me think, too, that like, I haven't been desperate. And I have not made a low enough cost design to be this desperate. Right, because you know that the low cost things that we're seeing on eBay, right? That's where this came from. Is they were looking at eBay parts. That's actually coming from, you know, they're just getting put on eBay from the markets probably, which means
and there's a 1,000-time markup on the eBay price, and so that means what they're buying them for.
There's someone that's going between like, you know, 3 RMB and 2 RMB, right? But that is such a critical, you know, amount of currency for this one project that like,
right,
that's the thing. That's the thing you got to do. Right. And it's like, damn, that's crazy. I mean, they're probably buying reels and whatever, but,
reels, none of that real rubbish. This is dip tubes, man. Tubes.
Oh, tubes. You're right. Of course.
Hey,
why would you dip parts? Oh man.
But yes.
Yeah. You still love them, huh?
Old school.
Still love the dip
still
parts.
Still love them. Yep, even when they embed in my foot.
Yeah. Oh. Dip parts and Legos.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man.
Speaking of ZeptoBars.
Yeah, there was another one.
They have finally torn down the Batteroo ASIC chip.
I haven't heard of this chip before. I don't really know what you're...
No, they
actually
did...
heard you say this word Batterizer before.
Ah, oh, right. Yeah, probably not. It turns out they did actually, they weren't lying. They did actually make their own custom chip.
I read this, though, too.
I thought they were doing.
There is a custom chip. It doesn't mean they made it, though.
Oh, no. But right? They could have just... I'm not sure who actually designed it. They probably contracted out one of the... Well, they, you know, you'd be crazy if you didn't go to one of the... they actually have contacts. In fact, I traced down that the CEO of Batteriser used to work with somebody who's now the head of the DC to DC boost converter at some company. I forget their name. I posted on the forum.
Okay. Yeah.
So they probably use their contacts there to get them to design this custom variant of probably an existing part they had. It's probably, you know, I don't know. But anyway, it's actually a pretty cool chip. It has very limited
Dave
use.
Dave Jones just said something nice about Batteriser.
I've said it quite a few times on the forum. There's nothing new about this.
Gotcha.
And everyone's saying the same thing. It's actually a nice solution for what it is. It's actually a really... It's probably the world's best chip at what it does, right? It's the lowest quiescent current, et cetera, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But it's limited in its... use. It's, you know, their application is still complete and utter impractical.
Right. And it's basically a boost converter.
Bullshit.
That's the idea, right?
Right.
It was like
it's a two-stage
boost converter or something like that.
It's a synchronous two-phase boost.
Yeah.
Not stage, phase.
Right.
So, yep.
Okay.
Anyway, and they've got like a data sheet for it now. Hmm. And apparently, I don't know, if you talk to them, you could buy it if you needed a single
cell. You might be able to buy it on the market on eBay for cheaper at some point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, someone will rip this off because there's such a need for a single cell boost converter.
Right.
It would have, and a lot of people on the forum are talking about, why didn't they just design it with like to make it a bit more universal, tiny bit more universal? voltage range, and it would have been more useful.
Like a commercial product at that point, right?
Yeah. But they were pivoting so tied in with their, you know, they were so obsessed with their ridiculous false idea that, you know, everyone needed, that this batterizer thing was going to save the world, you know. They were so obsessed with that. They didn't make the design universal enough to make it a, you know, otherwise it'd be a reasonably successful chip. So anyway, yeah, there's a die shot.
Yeah.
So we've
got other ones too. Look at
this custom.
There's another one. There was the Zeptobars has been busy, and or we haven't checked very often apparently.
Right. Yeah.
The power NPN BJT. Did you see that one?
No.
So I've been posting all these as I see them pop up on Twitter, basically, you know.
Right.
But this one is actually really, it's gorgeous design. It's really just the metal layer shown.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. Oh, yeah, yes, I did see that, yeah.
Yeah.
I just love the symmetrical layer.
I mean, it looks like art. It really does, like.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
And this is just metal layer, though.
But there'd be a technical reason why. Can that photo of that die, that power BJT die, be the photo for this episode or whatever? Because that's really cool.
Well, we don't have the license for it, but maybe.
Oh, they won't mind. Zepto bars are cool. They won't mind
we'll
us.
We'll send them some traffic.
There.
It'll be great.
We'll send them traffic, reciprocal links, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's how the internet works, man.
Yep.
I send you traffic, you send me traffic. We're all friends now. Yeah.
but there's probably a technical reason why that symmetry and that layout works, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, because with BJTs, on silicon, I'm probably starting to talk out my ass here. In fact, I guarantee I am.
Right, right, right. Yeah, now we're in.
It's like, you know, surface area and efficiency of surface area and all sorts of symmetry in surface area. And, I went down a rabbit hole here the other day and found that the thermal transfer rate across a die is, if memory serves me correctly from the other night, I was reading this late at night, is 1 micrometer per microsecond. That is how fast you heat up. I can find the reference for it.
So if you have like a point source of heat, you're saying.
If there's an individual transistor that you're overloading on a die or is heating up on a die, right, how fast does that heat spread across the die? Right, yeah. And it turns out it's like 1 micrometer per microsecond or something.
And that's regardless of like heat sinking or anything else. You're saying
that makes no difference. Like it's because the heat's got to spread across the die in order to get out of the package, in order to get to the thermal pad, to get out. Right, so it's all to
any,
do with
any idea if
how,
that was at the silicon layer, if that was like higher up in the substrate.
No. This is silicon layer. This is how it spreads across the silicon.
Interesting. Okay.
So if you heat up an individual, it was to do with overloading an individual output transistor.
Because then it would, like a totem pole output.
Right.
If the heat starts to spread, because it's really the heat would start to spread, and then the ions would start to migrate because of the heat starting to release some of their bonds and stuff like that, right?
Right,
and
that's all really that physics stuff, right?
Yada, 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 you know, ion implantation. Pretend Chris remembers anything from a silicon dish.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that was fascinating.
That really is.
I had never heard that figure stated before for the heat transfer rate across the surface of an encapsulated die.
Dude, that would be a good video, I'm saying, if you could find more about that.
I know.
That would be good.
Like, to get a I do actually have that new FLIR thermal camera, but A, it wouldn't be fast enough.
Right.
And
then
B,
it's like,
it wouldn't it be lower resolution.
I was
going
to say, it doesn't work through a microscope, does it?
Exactly. I would have to have specific thermal germanium macro lenses.
a lot of tiny, tiny, tiny thermocouples.
Google it. Can you buy a germanium thermal macro lens?
Live Googling. You're saying that because it would pass through... the IR would pass through?
Yes, yeah. They make these lenses. Lenses in thermal cameras are made out of germanium, typically. Because
$40 lens
thermal.
Gives your FLIR higher clarity, according to Hackaday.
What?
A $40 lens gives your FLIR higher clarity. For the E4 thermal camera, they put some lens on it.
I've got one. Shay, send me the link. I've got the E8.
Okay. Well, there you go. Maybe that'll help. Look at that. Live Googling works. No, that's interesting. So you're just saying that it helps to actually focus the IR or what?
Well, yeah, thermal cameras are no different to regular cameras. You've got to have a lens system on there that focuses a wide field view onto your particular dye surface area. It's got to be the focal length. It's all the optics are all the same, except
it's just a different wavelength.
Wavelength.
Yeah.
So they've got to make them out of germanium or some other material that's that can pass thermal.
Interesting.
Right? So yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Hmm.
Well, I hope to see that soon. One last dye-based item from our list. Electron Update, we did a teardown look at the 6502 CMOS version, which I didn't realize was a different thing. My silicon history is pretty lame.
Yeah,
so.
You suck at it. Yeah, don't bother.
So anyways,
anyway, we've had Chuck Peddle on the show.
Right. We should refer people back to that one of the best episodes.
And this is a great video. We'll link this one in.
Yeah.
And it's just basically a teardown and explanation of the 6502 die.
Right. So I'm amazed people are still doing this stuff.
The 65CO2.
Right. Right. They're still building stuff. Like there's still like a huge community around that, the whole vintage thing, you know.
Mm.
They love it. Simple instruction set, I suppose, and peeking and poking.
Because the CMOS die would be totally, the 65CO2, entirely different die, entirely different technology to the presumably bipolar 6502.
I guess it would have been, I don't even know.
Whatever, you know,
Right, but that's, we did talk to Chuck about that, it probably was, right?
Right, I don't remember.
No, it wouldn't have been BJT. It's, well, maybe.
Well, whatever, you know, it's not a CMOS. It was whatever the opposite to the CMOS process.
Yeah, it was MOS instead of
MOS or whatever. Yeah. Right. Or No. It's No. It's got to be like a.
Now we're talking to our ass.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm looking it up again.
I'm looking it up again. Furiously,
look, we're at 351 episodes, folks. Give us a break. Give us a goddamn break. Also, we don't really know what we're talking about. This is actually confusing.
The CMOS version was done by the Western Design Center. Was done by a different group. So, anyway,
I'm going to throw myself on the altar of embarrassment here. I don't get it. I don't. What?
You don't
get the difference?
What between a CMOS processor and a regular processor at the time, back in the day, dude, this is really important. All of the notebooks back in the day, right, using the CMOS version of the 6502 would allow you not only to get a lower power CPU for a given clock speed, so important in battery powered, like the early notebooks.
Oh.
Like, well, they weren't called notebooks, well, whatever they were,
okay,
you know. Like the Tandy Radio Shack, the Trash 100, for example, right?
Okay.
Sorry for those TRS fanboys. I using the trash term trash for TRS. Oops.
Okay, so I found what I was looking
down
for here.
Anyway, so not only do they give you slower rate, but you can actually slow them down to an arbitrarily slow clock speed. Right. Uh-huh. So if you're just a lot of the old computers that were battery powered would dynamically slow down to like, you know, 10 kilohertz or something if you're just waiting for key presses. Right. And then once it's doing processing, it'd start up again at the 4 megahertz rate or whatever the processor with 2 megahertz or whatever the processor was capable of. Right. Because you wouldn't want to always run it at 2 megahertz if you're just sitting there waiting for it, scanning for a key press. For example.
Okay.
And also, so not only could you arbitrarily slow them down to an arbitrarily slow clock speed, like 1 hertz, you could slow them down to 0 hertz and put the processor in, like, freeze. You just stop the clock and it just stays there. It stays in that state. And that was a big thing. So all of the, you know, a lot of the early computers, you would, when you shut them down, they'd simply freeze the processor. Everything's still in memory. The processor still has all its registers. And when you turn it back on, boom, and the processor just starts up again instantly where it's left off. It's no loading an image back off a drive or something.
Right.
You know, that modern bloody computers do.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Okay, so the thing that I was confused about is like CMOS versus what? That's really what I was confused about.
Okay.
And I remember, that's what Chuck was talking about. Remember he talked about, this is a while ago now, but he was talking about, remember they only had one type of transistor? And so that was NMOS, so depletion load NMOS. That's what they were using on the 6502. Yes,
right.
C is complementary, right? So you have N channel and P channel.
Complementary, that's right. Okay. Yep.
And then the other one is HMOS, I'm reading. That was later. That's what they use for high density short channel MOS, HMOS. That's what Intel started with.
Yeah, I don't remember that being hugely popular, was it?
HMOS. Again, we're looking all this stuff up live.
Anyway,
I feel like we shouldn't be embarrassed about this stuff at a certain point. Like,
I know.
Who's going to remember all this stuff? But anyways, HMOS was later, and then BiCMOS, that was in the later on after that. There's just a lot of different MOS types.
And now they've got 20 million different variants of processors.
Right, I mean, What's the BCD, what's that one?
Bipolar, we talk about one the other CMOS, week that was
DMOS,
just,
or something like that? Or,
I don't know.
I don't remember. I remember BCD crazy. Process, but... That's like a combined
process.
Yeah, we were
talking about that Intel 5 nanometer thing, weren't we? Or the IBM 5 nanometer thing the other week.
Right,
and it used some whiz-bang new bloody process.
And, that was not the... So, like, the CMOS versus the NMOS, as far as I can tell, though, is it's actually how you're building each gate, right? So in the NMOS, you're building with three transistors, but there's not different... doping like you need with CMOS, right? So you have a N channel, P channel, you actually turn them on, you know, that's like the what'd you call it, totem pole, right? So that's like the thing you were talking about, and then that's like CMOS, right, where you basically turn it on and off like an inverter, right? And then NMOS, though, I'm not sure how that worked, but that was what the 6502 was originally. So that's
right. Well, a CMOS inverter is simply two gates. It's right. and you just two MOSFETs, and you tie the input gates together and tie the outputs together, and that's like in a totem pole configuration. It literally is just one totem pole, and you feed the signal into the two gates.
But isn't CMOS one an N? One is an N and one is a P, right?
And then when you tie the gates together, when you input a higher low to a gate, it turns one transistor on or the other. You know, it literally is that easy.
Yeah.
So
yes, that sounds right. And if not, I'm sure our people forget. We have a comment section, so you can come and tell us how stupid we are.
Yeah, tell us that we're wrong, because we always are.
Like usual.
Yep.
There was one other thing I wanted to mention, because there was another thing about on our list about process stuff.
Oh, yes, an NMOS inverter doesn't use a totem pole arrangement. It uses effectively a pull-up resistor.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes. So it might use another transistor as a resistor, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know the physical implementation of the resistor on the die, but that's the difference. An NMOS inverter is like using a single transistor with a pull-up resistor.
Oh, interesting.
That's
going to be a higher power burn, that kind of thing, right?
And higher power burn and all that sort of thing.
Right.
That's
and
why
CMOS is slower because
of
capacitance
actually,
built in. You get an RC effect, that kind of thing, right?
Exactly. And so that's why CMOS is, CMOS killed it overnight.
We don't even need to friggin' think about this stuff anymore, you know? It's like...
I know. It's just like...
It's just like, oh, okay, well, I guess that... It's just digital,
so not,
digital work, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway.
So there was a thing about... I saw 7 nanometers on our list here somewhere. Nanometers. Can't find it, of course. Oh, here we go. GlobalFoundries. GlobalFoundries, who is what... basically, GlobalFoundries is what AMD did, which I think Intel will eventually do. They split out the fab, right, from AMD.
Right.
So basically, they're already preparing for 7 nanometers. So we talked about the IBM 5 nanometer before. Is just going straight for it for production. So that's crazy.
It's getting to a point where I simply will not trust these chips. You know, like surely, like
I mean,
I don't
come on,
care.
Man. We can't see them now. We're not gonna be able to see them then. It doesn't matter. You know.
I don't know. It's
just hope they test it.
Gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. Well, you can always go back and you can go back to basics, Dave.
Right.
With this lovely kit from SparkFun. I don't know if you saw this one. They started selling it again. I mean, I don't know if it ever stopped being sold, but I didn't see them for a while. SparkFun selling the 130-in-1 kits.
Oh, right. Nice. Oh, made by Elenco, right. Yep.
I didn't, those, so those have been made for, I didn't know they were still making them.
Oh, no, they've been still making them. I don't think they've ever stopped. There's always been a company that's made them.
Yeah, okay. I thought they got discontinued.
No, like, you know, Radio Shack / Tandy stopped making them, but other companies picked them up. Other companies just copied the form factor.
Yeah, it's just springs and cardboard, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Springs and cardboard and chips put on the.
I love it, though. I love that they're selling this thing. Yeah. It's like $50, too. Like, that's a great thing for, like, you know, buying for a niece or nephew and, you know, just. Yeah.
I'll be doing that. I'll be dragging out my 30-year-old one and actually playing with Sagan, and we'll build it up, and we'll build up a circuit on there. Oh, yeah, right, totally. Yeah.
That's how a lot of people got started. So you can still buy them. That's great.
Yep. And what are the chips on there now? It's got to be the same. Like there's a couple of trainees on there. There's a bunch of green caps by the looks of it. There's some, you know, and there's a couple of like NAND gates. And,
yeah, it says integrated circuits, NAND gates, and an op amp.
And the old AM antenna rod.
Oh, yeah.
Because the value in these is the, not so much the physical platform as such, but the manual, like the, you know, the circuits and the manual and the schematics and the information.
Not really the fact that you just can wire stuff together. I mean, like, it's like there's no soldering required. Even like bending leads isn't required.
Yep.
And it's pretty much just point to point. Yeah, just this plugs into here, this plugs into there, and you're off to the races. This is a dopamine generator. That's what you want. That is the best part for getting started in electronics, is a dopamine generator.
Cool. Well, that's our show, isn't it?
Oh, by
far. We're Dunsky.
Yeah. Anyone else wants to, they can go and see our subreddit, which has many more links and continues to throughout the weeks. So. Oh, cool. I had a chip for the week. I don't know if that was...
We already had a chip of the week.
You had a chip of the week.
Yeah, I had a chip of the week.
Yeah, you didn't have the part number for it, though, did you? You said the TI 80 gigahertz something something.
Yeah, something rather. I've got it right in front of me. They can't see it because it's so bloody small.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Need a microscope and the light at the right angle to, you know.
Well, I was going to recommend the CSR 8645, which is a crazy... It's Qualcomm, but it's a... you just look at what's in this thing, you're like, what the hell? And it's like a dollar. But basically, this is like the design that's in like every... You know when you get your email for... You want Bluetooth speaker? What I didn't realize is that Bluetooth speaker is actually reference design speaker.
Ah, right.
So this is what's in a lot of them. And basically it acts as a, it can act as the speaker or it can act as the headset. And that's what's crazy. So it's got a microphone, it's got a DAC. So it's got an ADC, a DAC, it's got DSP on board. It's got battery charging and tons of stuff. And it's got the Bluetooth interface,
does it? Or is that a separate chip?
Yeah. It's a 4.1 Bluetooth. So like, it's all in this one thing, right? This kind of reminds me of,
It's a complete custom ASIC solution for a product. It's specifically tailored for Bluetooth headsets.
This is a Bluetooth. This is a Bluetooth headset thing that it's awesome. Yeah. So
it's probably even got battery charging circuitry and all sorts of crap in. Right?
Right. Yeah, and this kind of reminded me of single what chip. We talked to. I don't remember if you were on the show with us with Jürgen. Yeah, who did this for the audio stuff for?
I think I was. I do remember that.
Yeah, for hearing aids. Yeah, you were. Yep. Yeah. No, you weren't.
Why not? You weren't. Anyway, I do remember it.
So anyways, yes.
Anyway, very cool.
Yeah. That kind of stuff where it's just like these super, super integrated things. So we go from 130 in one kits to completely integrated single chip solutions.
Yeah. That's probably in some pain in the ass flip chip bloody bullshit package, you know.
You will not have a good time soldering this. Yeah. Where is it? Package 5.5 by 5.5 millimeter, 0.5 millimeter pitch.
Oh, massive pin pitch at 0.5 millimeter.
Oh yeah, right. You get more than 0.4.
Yeah, no, it's 0.4 rubbish.
Right. 0.8. Yeah. What's that for? Giants.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, man.
That's cool. It.
We'll talk to you next week.
Catch you next time.